PPI.org.
Good evening. Thank you for joining Disability and Progress, where we bring you insights into ideas about and discussions on disability topics. My name is Sam. I'm the host of this show. Thanks so much for tuning in. Thanks so much for Annie Harvey, who is my engineer, Charlene Dahl, who is my research team. And tonight, just a couple announcements before I announce tonight. If you want to be on my emailer, you may email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com, and I will add you to the list. And we have a Facebook page. Yay! Charlene, did you get to add to the Facebook page today?
Well, I'm trying.
Oh, I see. You haven't.
new territories for me, but we're working on it. I think I did.
Okay. So I will hopefully get the URL. I think it is facebook.com/disabilityandprogress. I think that's what it is. So I will have that for you for sure next week. So thanks for joining us. Tonight we are talking about learning with more. That's MOHR, members caring for individuals with disabilities with the COVID shutdown of services. So we will be speaking to a number of people. Jeannie Calvet. Jeannie, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Is it Jean or Jeannie? Do you prefer?
Jeannie's fine.
Jeannie Calvet. Jeannie is the director of Interact Center for the Visual Performing Arts in St. Paul. And we are also with Dan Reed. Good evening, Dan.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Thank you. Dan is from Choice in Eden Prairie. Dan is a remote learning developer, I believe. Right? Did I get that right?
You got that just fine.
Megan Moe is also with us. Good evening, Megan.
Good evening.
Megan is the developer of remote learning for MRCI in Mankato. I am familiar with MRCI, but I can't tell you how. And of course, we have Sherry Wallace. Sherry is from the Wallace Group. And I want to start out by, first of all, Sherry, do you want to do an introduction of how you are involved with this? And what does MOHR stand for all those who are new and don't know?
Well, it's so nice to have this program and again to work with you and Charlene, Sam. MOHR stands for Minnesota Organization of Habilitation and Rehabilitation. It's a simpler way to say it. It is day training programs across Minnesota, over 100 programs that provide training for education and life skills and employment for individuals with disabilities. It's been around a long time, and it is serving in a wide variety of ways. And the one unique thing is its flexibility to respond when there is a COVID that is on the horizon.
That's
the real remarkable thing about this organization. They act like a nonprofit business, in which they are looking for solutions because their charge is to take care of the needs of people with disabilities during the day and they go back home to their residence or to their family or to their house. But it is important that they provide training, and whether that be training of just personal life skills or how to survive in a really good employment opportunity for them. So it's very exciting what these programs have done with COVID coming up. So that is why I wanted this program to happen. My role is to show off what more organizations are doing around the state.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I think Dan, we lost Dan there. Hopefully he'll be back in. I want to start out by having each of you just give a brief background for the other guys of, there Dan is, of who you are and what your background was before you came to the job that you're doing now. And we'll start with Jeannie.
Hi, yes. Before I founded Interact Center, I come from an arts background. I studied theater and visual arts in Europe. I lived there for 10 years. And I just kind of happened into the whole disability field because my friend Greg Glaze from Wilderness Inquiry invited me and my partner to do a workshop up in 1980, a theater workshop with people with disabilities up at a camp for people with developmental disabilities. And I put plays on for the first time. I'd never worked with people with disabilities, and it just became a mission. And I really have been doing it ever since in some form, and founded Interact 25 years ago. So
Dan, great, thank you. Dan, how about you? What was your background before you came to do what you're doing now?
Well, I would probably be the last person who ever thought would have done this sort of thing. I used to have my own company and a partner, but he had cancer and we had to sell the business. And I got involved with another business and lost all my money.
Oh no.
And I had to find a job. And so I applied to be a marketing director at a program in St. Paul. And I was the least qualified person for it. Again, I grew up, I went to Catholic schools. We didn't have people with disabilities around. Mm-hmm. I'd never been around people with disabilities. And they gave me the job. And I quit every day for 6 months till I realized that this is what I was absolutely supposed to do. And I've never looked back since.
So what a great learning experience for you.
Well, it was funny. I quit every day for 6 months, as I said, and I started just writing notes down just to kind of calm myself down. And all of a sudden I had the makings of a book, and I wrote a book about it. So.
Oh, excellent. Megan, how about you?
I started working with adults diagnosed with disabilities when I was younger. My mom actually kind of helped me become passionate about that. She provided music classes for adults diagnosed with disabilities. So I would go with her and volunteer. And that's where I kind of found my passion. And I knew from a young age that I wanted to help provide opportunities for people.
Excellent. Okay, so now it's time for you guys to give the voice to what the program is and the location that you are, that you're at, and the program that you're involved with. So we'll start with Dan.
Okay, so I work with a company called Choice Incorporated. It's based in the western suburbs. And it's kind of funny, it started out as a little old DAC in Eastern Carver County, and over 50 years ago. And now it's really it's a premier program in Carver County and in Eden Prairie, Minnetonka, and Maple Grove.
Megan?
I am a day service coordinator with MRCI. MRCI stands for Manage Resource Connections Incorporated. And we provide opportunities for adults diagnosed with disabilities in the metro and southern areas of Minnesota.
And Jeannie.
Our location now is in St. Paul, and it's a visual and performing arts center. So we have a theater there to where we rehearse, but we perform out in the community at the Guthrie, at the Lab Theater, at Mixed Blood. We have our studio for our visual artists, but they also exhibit their work in the community at leading galleries and around the country. Now, of course, everything is remote. But I founded Interact and because there I wanted to give options for creative people with disabilities that see art and theater as their work, as their mission, and as their passion. So it's a professionally run visual and performing arts center for professional artists with disabilities. So.
Can you each talk about your connection to the remote training program, I guess as either a director or a program developer?
Well, I'll start. Well, we knew nothing about remote programming, but all of my staff, have 25 staff. They're all artists, professional, you know, and I think they're good at, you know, making lemonade out of lemons. Artists always are. And we just started experimenting and creating all kind of classes and asking the artist what they would like, and had brainstorming sessions with them on Zoom, and just started doing it. And we're kind of refining it now. We're getting better and better, but we were, you know, it's a little bumpy in the beginning, mm-hmm. but we've really taken off now, and we have 50 classes a week. And they're, I mean, we have up to sometimes 30, even up to 60 people in a class, but we have lots of staff. It's a 1-to-4 ratio.
Okay, so, Dan, how about you?
Well, I knew less about a remote education, or whatever you want to call it, than Jeannie did. So, but fortunately, I work with great people, and program manager goes, maybe we can put some of these classes online. I go, okay, that's okay. So, you know, I'm sure Jeannie's the same way. I didn't know what Zoom was in March. Now I'm an expert at it. It's just terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it's just goofy, but yeah, so it That's how we started, and the response from our members and participants was terrific right from the get-go.
And Megan?
So I, as a day service coordinator, I help develop and implement the virtual programming. And we have a day service manager named Angela Lalick, who started to create the curriculum and provide virtual services to a small group of clients. When I joined in May, I assisted in growing our services and our curriculum. And then we had a group of day service coordinators who contacted all of our previous clients to share about our virtual programming and in order to grow it.
Ah, yes, as everyone is frantically doing now. If they weren't doing it in March, they are definitely doing it now, or they're drowning. I want to kind of... Now we can get into kind of the what types of classes or learning classes that you guys each offer. And sounds like some of you have many, but how many, you know, are you, how many classes are you teaching, and what types of classes?
You want me to start?
Go ahead.
Well, we have 50 classes, and I go into the first one every day, and there are different themes, like awesome stories, Interact stories about the 25 years of history and fun things and former artists. That's the only class I really run there, because I have 25 staff, and they're teaching everything from stretch and sketch, painting, drawing, ceramics, cooking, in visual performing arts, we have creative writing, singing, music, dancing, character development, playwriting, and we mix it up. We have a brainstorming session in the morning, so we're always looking. We're asking our artists for new ideas of things that they would like to do. A lot of our artists are now teaching and presenting in some of the workshops, so it's very collaborative. I would say it's more collaborative than when we were in-house. And we have a survey at the end of every week, and people say which classes they like. And even when they like a class, after about 2 or 3 weeks, we like to switch it up, keep it really fun for everybody, because it does get to be exhausting sitting in front of a screen 4 to 5 hours a day. So we just want to keep it as fun as possible. We have a lot of guest artists too. We've had Kevin Kling come in and visit, so that keeps people interested too.
I have to ask, cooking could seem like a very tricky one. I'm guessing they all get to watch somebody cook and they write down the recipe or something, or how do you?
Well, one of our artists has given cooking class, and she has her phone. I think she has her sister, someone in her family, hold the phone while she's cooking different and describing how she makes things.
Ah, gotcha.
So that's how it works.
All right. So Megan, go ahead.
So we have 5 sessions per day, Monday through Friday. We have 1 session that is a social hour throughout the day, and that's for individuals who want to try out our virtual services prior to scheduling. Mm-hmm. We typically have 4 to 6 clients in each group. And we cover, we want our sessions to be interest-based, but we also want to teach at the same time. So we have some main topics that we cover, like social skills, independent living skills, money management. But we also have some fun topics every week, like Travel Tuesday or Games and Gab on Friday, where we're able to provide that social interaction piece as well.
Okay, and about how many classes did you say you have?
We have 5 sessions throughout the day, and with each session we have 5 to 6 groups of 4 to 6 clients at a time. Our social hour is the only group where anyone could join, so we could have 15 participants at a time join on that social hour.
But do you have various other classes that you do?
Throughout the day, yes. We have 4 other sessions throughout the day, which are our scheduled sessions where participants sign up for how many days they'd like to participate and the times during the day as well.
Dan, how about you?
We do about 45 classes a week. And some days we do a few more than others, but we have them throughout the day. And just like other people have mentioned, they range everything from the social skills part, just the social, like we call it, connect conversation, just where the theme is, you know, as we surveyed our families and our participants, the loneliness factor was such a huge issue, and just not being able to see people directly. And that, so we really focus on that they can connect and express their frustrations or their happiness or whatever. And it builds a lot of camaraderie, which is good. And then we, a big portion of ours is health and wellness. It's always been a big part of the programming. And it really, and that actually works really well remotely. And then we have games and stuff too, and card sharks and scavenger hunts. One guy he's a beekeeper. It's one of our most popular classes. Oh, is beekeeping.
Cool. Yeah.
And it's just a lot of sensory integration, meditation, in our cooking classes, the participants cook at home. We set up the cameras and so that, you know, that they can watch, and then they know what the ingredients are, so they make the stuff for the, at home too.
Neat.
And that's been really good too, that it's really good, healthy food and alternatives, and it just blends right. Really nicely in our mission of being healthy.
I'm wondering, are all of you now remote as far as all your classes? Are they all remote? And if so, did all the people you have that were in person, did they all kind of go to remote, or did you lose some here or there? Let's start with you, Megan.
We have not been able to provide remote or virtual sessions for all clients, unfortunately. We've realized that technology is a barrier with providing mm-hmm. remote learning. There have been some participants who are focusing more on the employment side and employment out in the community, which is great. So I would say we haven't been able to provide services for everyone who we were previously.
About how many participants total are involved in your remote?
We have around 120 clients who participate throughout the week in our virtual sessions.
And Dan, how about you?
Well, we actually brought some people in-house too. The Department of Human Services allowed us to bring in what they call cohorts. So we had different cohort groups that would come in and honestly, those cohorts, they did independent stuff, but they also came in and joined remote at the same time, just to break it up and do different things. So we support about 200 clients at Choice, and there's less than 20 that are not involved. Almost right everybody.
Now, your in-house is about ready to close, right?
So we opened it up. It was going really well. And of course, now we're gonna close it down. We're in the process of closing it down again. But again, because of remote services, all of the people that are going to have to stay home they're still gonna have their cohorts. There's just gonna be virtual.
And Jeannie, how about you?
Well, when we first started, we have 120 artists, and about half of them transitioned to the remote. Not all of them had computers, so we got computers for people. We got them trained in. Unfortunately, we lost some people, just didn't transition. We call them regularly, try to get them involved. Some of them have joined. But the good thing, I guess, is we're growing. We're taking a lot more artists. Literally, we have a long waiting list of people that have lost their jobs, or also we're reaching out way beyond the Twin Cities. Now, the good thing about remote is you don't have to worry about the rides.
Yeah.
So we're getting a lot of demand. In fact, we've got so much demand now, we've had to start hiring more staff because we don't have enough. We have to have a 4-to-1 ratio if we want to get the paid, halfway. The rate to be halfway decent. So we actually need more staff than we did before. So
I wanted to ask, what were some of the positive things that have happened with remote, with your doing the learning program with remote for your participants and your staff? And it sounds like that was a very positive thing, that you are reaching out more and more and you have a whole lot more than what you had before.
Yeah, we wouldn't have been able to take this many people in because, of our license. So now we're taking more people in, and people that would not have been able to get because of the length of the commute. We're getting a lot of people or that had their disability prevented them from being in a long ride because they had some health issues. So we're taking I think it actually expanded access in a way, which is great.
It sounds like too you're hiring people, which
we're hiring new
good
staff.
For the employment. So yeah, are you currently still looking, and should people go to your website to if they qualify?
Sure, we are. We're looking and we're looking for substitutes because the staff need to take vacations, people get sick. So we're looking for substitutes, to come in on a day and be part of the, be part of the classes. So yeah, we're looking for people.
And Dan, you're next. So the positive impact of this remote programs what have they had on the participants and the staff?
Well, one of the things that Jeannie mentioned was really, relevant to us too is the transportation, in the sense that you know, they don't have to get on the vans. They don't have to wait for their metro rides. That really has helped. The knowledge level of the technology of our participants is unbelievable. They're so much more comfortable in front of the computers. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's just like nothing to them now. And they, mm-hmm. they've learned so much about the computer that's really, really gratifying and exciting, because now we're going to push much more into the technology component of it as we expand. And that's a major focus, because they want to be more independent.
And Megan, how about you?
I think that something that we've continued to hear from support teams is that virtual programming has given individuals an opportunity to connect with their peers, and then also something to look forward to throughout their day. Mm-hmm. Even if it is just an hour or two a day that they're joining on sessions, they're socializing with their peers. And something else is that since we've combined all of the sites for remote learning, we've provided an opportunity for individuals to get to know people from different areas of Minnesota, make those connections and gain new friendships as well.
I'm wondering how you guys both formally and informally measure the success of the remote classes that are happening. Why don't you start, Dan?
Well, it's great. One nice thing about having options for people, they vote with their feet. If they don't like the class, they don't come to the class.
Mm-hmm.
Ah. And you know, it's like, you know, I can just turn you off. But we survey people almost continually, because we don't want the classes to get boring. We don't want them to get mundane. And honestly, the more we ask, the more they want from us. So it's great. Mm-hmm. And we're just diversifying so much more in our programming and supports. So that's really it. I mean, we can tell right away if people like the classes, because honestly, our classes fill up so quickly that, we can tell. In fact, one thing that we noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, you other folks, Megan and Jeannie, that last week was a really bad week. We had a lot of no-shows. Well, a lot of people were sick last week, but now it's up again this week. It made us nervous. It's like, oh my gosh, what's going on? Well, you know, COVID is more prevalent now, and it's starting to affect our numbers a little bit. Now this week we were better, but it was highly unusual. So I just wondered how people are feeling with that.
Megan, how about you? How are you guys measuring this informally and formally?
So we measure it kind of the same way that Dan was saying, where we are asking the participants weekly things that they want to learn more about. We did send out a survey recently to kind of measure where people are at with services, ways that we can improve, and also learn about their favorite things about virtual programming to make sure that we continue to do so. Something that we've noticed is some people are hesitant to join virtual programming. It's really new to a lot of people. So we have some people who maybe sign up for two sessions per week, and then by the end of the week, they're requesting to join on more sessions. And that's shown us a lot that that people are enjoying the services.
And Jeannie, how about you?
We have a survey that goes out at the end of the week, and we also go over it verbally for people, you know, that don't fit, you know, fill out the survey. And then you know, it's interesting because we have sometimes up to 60 people, like when Kevin Kling did it, some of the more popular classes, 60 people show up. And oh, wow. So we know, wow, that teacher's really popular and that's popular. And then people get a little competitive because they want. So we just keep refining it. And but as I said, one of our collaborators in Australia, our sister organization that we helped create, they started their remote before us because in Australia, they got funding immediately to do remote. It wasn't a problem like here. And they didn't get a rate cut either.
And so I asked my friend how, she said, the one thing I can tell you is even when you do things that people like a lot, mix it up every few weeks, because people, there's kind of a Zoom fatigue. And so novelty, try to always keep it fresh and be creative and take ideas from your participants of things that they'd want. So we do that just to freshen it up and keep it interesting. So
what has been some of the drawbacks that you have had with the remote learning? Let's start with Megan.
Something that I touched on before is that I think one of the drawbacks would be technology. Although technology is a great tool, not everyone has access to it. And some people maybe do, but they don't have systems that are compatible with the platform that we use. Although it's been a drawback, we've seen a lot of guardians, case managers, support team members work to provide that technology in order for people to participate, which has been great. And I think it's been a learning experience for everyone, and it's helped provide some of those independent living skills as well for the participants. Technology is very prevalent in our society, and we're only going to continue to use it more.
Dan, how about you?
Well, I think the biggest drawback, unfortunately, it ties back to money and the fact that the rate cuts that we had from our funding, which is through DHS, we're as well as we're doing with Connect, which is our program, it's still a fraction of what we used to bring in monetarily monthly. And, you know, and it can't sustain itself. And so it's you know, people are going to have to look at the whole thing differently, because there's a lot of work that goes involved with it, that's involved with it.
Yeah.
The money is the problem.
Jeannie?
Oh, I echo that. I think, you know, the only reason we're still in business is we got a lot of those COVID grants. We got like... $600,000 worth of COVID grants and loans. And if we were just dependent on the billing, we wouldn't be in such good shape. So it is not sustainable. That's the reality. And I don't know what we're going to, what we're going to do about that, but we hopefully will keep getting COVID grants, and we do a lot of fundraising, but that is definitely, and why you have to have four people, you have to have a higher percentage of staff than you do when you're in your physical space.
That is bizarre.
It doesn't make any sense whatsoever.
Right.
That we have it, you know, and it just, it's like, do they want us to go out of business? I mean,
somebody didn't think this through, right?
Yeah. And that's why a lot of people are going out of business. It's just, we're going to have to keep working to get a better rate. A big negative.
Something I've kind of seen as a teacher with people with disabilities, on some of the people who have, you know, I'd say if they have any learning disabilities, or that even like they have some kind of anxiety or depression, they have done it, but they have reacted a little bit rough, I'd say, you know, because they were so used to me coming there, and now they just want to be able to see me. And that seems, that transition was hard. And how common was that for each of you?
Well, in the beginning, the people didn't like the remote as much. I think they missed seeing it, but it's like after a few weeks, people just got kind of used to it. And you know, we have those social hours. We have coffee and chat where people are drinking their coffee and, hi, how's it going? And now it's just kind of like people say, this is our little Zoom community. So it was awkward in the beginning. And for some people, they really did struggle with the technology, but we got them help, and we, people are very resilient, you know?
Yeah. Megan?
I agree. I think it was difficult at first. It was a confusing time for many people wondering why we couldn't see each other in person and we couldn't go back to our centers. And I think we've worked through that. And like Jeannie said, people are resilient. And that's something that we've noticed is that resiliency, which is great. And we just continue to prompt and provide those opportunities for socialization, even in a virtual type setting.
Mm-hmm. Dan, how about you? I think you maybe mentioned that you've seen some of that too.
Oh, definitely. And one of the things that I think really helped was people didn't do anything for a couple of weeks or longer because it took a while to get things going. And then they could see in other parts of society, it was the same thing. It just wasn't people with disabilities. And then
it was kind of everyone.
And then it's like, well, this is better than nothing. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
And then they just got really comfortable with it. And so it's like the rest of us. It's like, you know, how do corporate America cope? You know, how do they cope? Mm-hmm. All of a sudden nobody's in the office and everyone's at home. And it's like, you know, this, you know, there's certain things that work great and other things that just like, oh my God, this is awful.
What has been one of the things that has surprised you about the impact of remote learning? Let's start with you, Dan.
I touched on it a little bit before, is the technology part and the fact that technology, people with disabilities, technology has not been their friend.
Mm.
You know, historically, whether it's a talking computer or whatever, just really crappy stuff. And now, our people are super hipster with this stuff. They're like, they're teaching their family how to do Zoom and stuff. I mean, like when things would crash and stuff and I'd be having a nervous breakdown, they're like super chill about it. It's like, maybe they're right. Maybe, you know, it's just to take everything so seriously.
How about you, Jeannie?
Can I just say one more thing?
Oh, sure.
The technology is going to open up a lot more opportunities for employment.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Jeannie.
At Interact, it's interesting because we have the visual artists who are in one place and they're working on all their projects and they're getting ready for exhibitions and things like that. Then we have the performing artist in another part and they don't really mix that much. And everybody's so busy because we're always working on a show, shows and projects and classes. So people don't really get to talk a lot. And I think now it's great. We have the morning session, coffee and chat. So the visual and performing artists are kind of mixing. And so a lot of the visual artists are going into the performing art and trying some of the dancing and some of the theater music. And then some of the performing artists start doing fabulous visual art. And now one of our performing artists, I had no idea was such a good artist, is exhibiting in the visual art show. So there's a lot more collaboration. And it's also, we have more time the staff has more time just to talk and hang out with them in some of these Zoom sessions before I couldn't just go in and sit there and talk for an hour with all the artists because we were always so busy. So I think we've gotten to know each other more. So I think there actually is a deeper bond between the artist and the staff and the artist. And it's more collaborative. It's much more collaborative than it was before.
It sounds like you're seeing new talents and people are getting to try things that they wouldn't normally or have time to do.
And I think they would have been shy before, like the visual arts to go and performing, you know, to do dancing. But now it's like, because I'm at home and everybody else is doing it, it's not like, oh, I have to get up and dance in front of everybody. So it's just it's the most creative time I think we've ever had because of this mixing everything up.
Megan, how about you? What has surprised you?
I think something that has surprised me is the ability to create those relationships virtually, where when we were in person before, we were really hands-on getting to know people. And now in a virtual type setting, I wasn't sure how that relationship building or that rapport building would go. But I've been pleasantly surprised at the friendships and the relationships that have been built. And we've still been able to get to know our participants through a screen, which has been amazing.
Yes.
If I could add one thing, I actually wrote it down last week. I was writing on it for a grant, and I said, one thing that this has happened is going remotely has almost made us closer.
I totally agree. Yes.
Absolutely.
I wonder, and I want each of you to contribute, if you will, to this. When this passes, and it will, as all things do, or change back to a little bit of what we know, what do you feel will not change? What's the one thing that now has happened that you feel like you won't be able to put back into the box, or that will always kind of stay out there?
I think the word listening. Because of being remote, we almost had to listen more intently.
Yeah.
And it goes both ways.
I completely agree. I think that, and just in an MRCI standpoint, as we've connected all the sites, I think we wish to stay connected and hopefully get together with other sites. It's been really great getting to know people from other areas, and I completely agree with Dan, though. We've been communicating in a different way and on a different level.
And how about you, Jeannie? What won't change?
The things we heard from early on, we have a lot of people that have like fibromyalgia, chronic pain, or they have some, you know, something that would prevent them from attending every day when they, you know. And so like usually in the winter, we have a problem with people not showing up. Because it's extremely cold. Maybe they suffer from depression. They look out the window. They're like, I'm not getting out of bed today. We all feel like that sometimes in the winter. Mm. And they said, really, you know, my attendance is way up because I don't have to get out of bed if I'm feeling a little sluggish or I'm having pain. I don't have to get ready and get on that Metro Mobility and bump around for an hour and have to get up like 2 hours early. So a lot of the attendance has gone up, and we wouldn't have to worry about snow days anymore where we can't open. So I talked to Commissioner Harpstead early on, and I said, I think we should keep the component because it increases accessibility for people that have physical issues, or they just live too far away from the program that they want to be in. And so I think that's something we should keep along with the, you know, the in-house programming. So like almost have a two-tiered program, or if people get sick, some of our people said, you know, I would have been out on medical leave this last month because I haven't been doing well, but they're sitting there in their bed taking part in the classes. So, and they say, I would have been really depressed because I would have been sitting in my bed being bored. And now I wake up every day and I'm doing classes while I'm healing. So I wouldn't want to change it.
To capitalize on this then, do you feel like the monetary part or the political part that gives the money, will they accept having as much remote when things go back the other way and not push you into having to have everyone come in? Do you think that will be an issue?
I talked to Commissioner Harpstead early on, you know, about this. And I think she listened, and there was a letter sent out at one point mentioning that they believe because of the added accessibility for people that they are going to consider continuing with the remote even after we can all be back in our programs. Plus, we've taken so many extra people now, we're not going to have room for them all in my program. So we're going to have to come up with some kind of a solution. And I'd rather do that than have to rent some more space. So,
Megan, so speaking of space, Megan, my understanding is, so correct me if I'm wrong, that MRCI has closed or has closed some of their buildings. How is that going to affect their program? And is this just a temporary thing or is this a turnover to a new thing?
It is a turnover to a new thing. So currently we do have two of our locations open, one in Mankato and one in New Ulm, where we are providing some in-house in-center for some clients who are at that retirement age. Okay. But we are moving to a completely community-based model going forward, where we will have everyone out in the community either participating in day services or working. So we're also hoping that our virtual programming will be able to continue to some degree moving forward for participants who maybe are joining in the community-based model half throughout the week or a couple days a week, and maybe they could also participate virtually a few times a week as well.
So what, any of you can answer this, what has doing this remote learning taught any of you that you would do differently when people come back in?
I'd like to comment on that. I perceive that, because we've already done this, I talked to briefly before about it, that we have our cohort group of say eight people in a classroom, and then there'll be up to 20 people on the coming in the class via Connect. They act like they're in the room. It is just, I'm sure that we will always offer this as an option because they don't care. I mean, it works so well that, yeah, don't you guys see that too?
Oh, totally, yeah.
Yes.
And presumably, Megan, your technology will get better and better with, doing the remote, because that's kind of what you guys are going toward.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and we hope that we're kind of like Jeannie said, we're hoping to be able to provide services to people outside of our normal areas. As we are remote, we should be able to provide services to anyone who are looking for them.
So is there any more, anything else that anybody would like to add? I don't know if Charlene, if you had any questions, but is there anything else as well that you guys would like to add or any stories you want to tell?
Sam, I encourage them, all three of them, to think of some short stories about what this has meant, or maybe some comments from families or comments from the individuals themselves. And I think that would just make it all come alive for us.
We do that. We take comments from quotes and comments a lot from our artists in some of our sessions, like, how did the Zoom change your life? Or what do you love about it? Mm-hmm. And people are very eloquent. They really are. It changed my life because I was so alone. There was about a month where we didn't have services. And that talked about feeling despondent, hopeless, and how, the Zoom just brought them back to life. And we're going to be doing a Zoom performance, creating a Zoom performance with our visual and performing artists together and interacting together and bringing it a multi-platform visual performing music, oh, cool, dance, everything. We're hiring someone to help us with this because it's quite daunting. We have to get cameras to everybody. It's kind of ambitious, but we're going to be doing a Zoom, big Zoom performance, and it's going to be about this time in our history and how it's changed us all for the better in some ways. So And it's going to be like love in the time of Corona or something like that.
I hope you will send the info to me when you are going to do that so we can get in an email. I presume this will be a public performance so people.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Either. And the good thing is, you know, we've had collaborators in Australia because we've done things in Australia. We have collaborators in Thailand. We have collaborators in Europe. So we're going to be inviting some of those groups that we've worked with to do like a scene in our show so we can have like Thai dance as part of the show or,
yes.
You know, or some of the things that we've done in those countries and have them do a scene. So it'll be, we want to make it international. So
it's kind of amazing. You would have never thought to do this before this.
No, well, it would have been really expensive to fly all those people. We couldn't have done it, but now we can just, they can film it and it can be part of our Zoom thing and then they can share it with people in Australia so we can get a wider audience, you know.
Anybody else have anything they'd like to add?
I think something that I've touched on before is just how virtual programming has given people the opportunity to look forward to something throughout their day. We've received feedback from parents and guardians and residential staff that our virtual meetings give people something to look forward to, something to get out of bed in the morning. And we recognize that they do look forward to it. When we start a session, we have people waiting in the lobby, as you do, and we're able to see when someone first joins on. And sometimes
yes.
Waiting for 30 minutes or an hour for their session to start. And so we're able to see that people are really excited and looking forward to see us.
To kind of add to that, what we see is on the back end, so the class is an hour. A lot of times it goes an hour and a half, hour 45 minutes. They're in no hurry to get off it at all. And that actually does help because we can bill for that. But you know, I think I mentioned this when we were on the air before, but we had sent out a request for feedback to submit to DHS about what Connect was, we call it, meant to them. We got 12 pages of incredibly moving stories about how this has, people say, well, this saved our family. This turned around so many things where you hate to even be dramatic about it, but it's just unreal how people just loved it from the get-go. And then the ones that were a little more nervous about it, well, they heard so-and-so was on it, you know? You know, they're pioneers. Again, the people that we all work with are pioneers, and they, you know, and this is a whole nother thing for them. And it makes, you know, I get to brag to my friends how much I love my job. I tell you, very few people are very happy with their jobs right now.
That is so true. So I wonder, I think when we first started this, people were really worried about the financial part of it, keeping up with, you know, now that you've found a way to do it, first of all, people were upset and worried about not having places stay open. And now that they're not, you know, and they were still worried about the financial part of it. So do you think the financial part will keep up with it?
It's hard to tell. We're going to have, the response has been so overwhelmingly positive by our families and by our participants that I think DHS is going to have to relook at how some of the funding is looked. Don't you think, you guys think that?
Oh, they have, we have to push them. We have to communicate with them why this is so important.
It sounds and like so many, sounds the, like it's really, good for another advocating class, Sherry.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, I think we're just about at the end of our time. Is there anything else anybody wants to add?
Well, I just want to thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you.
And congratulations, Jeannie and Megan. Isn't it fun to be part of this thing? Because people go, they go, what? Oh, yeah, it's really cool how it works.
It's really fun. It's nice, too. Sometimes you don't even want to get out of your pajamas. you can just, you can like, oh, I got a class to start in 5 minutes. Brush your hair. Whoop. So.
Yes. And they've done that.
A lot of people have been doing that on a cold day, especially.
Thank you guys very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jasmine. Thank you, all of you. Keep up the good work.
This has been Disability and Progress. Mm-hmm. The views expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KFAI or its board of directors. This is Disability and Progress, KFAI.org. Annie Harview Engineers. Thank you, Annie. Charlene Dahl is my research woman. Tonight, the topic was remote learning with more members caring for individuals with disabilities with the COVID shutdown with services. We were speaking with Jeannie Calvet. Jeannie was from Interact Center for the Performing Arts in St. Paul. Also Dan Reed from Choice in Eden Prairie, who's a remote learning developer. Also Megan Moe. Megan is the developer of remote learning for MRCI in Mankato. If you want to be on my email list, again, you may email me at disabilityandprogress@samjasmine.com. And check out our new Facebook page. Also, check out our podcasts, which are growing. Thank you for joining me. Fresh Fruit is up next. Good night.
Good night.
KFAI.org.